Hi, everybody. I'm Sheldon Fetty. I'm an alcoholic. It is, as many of the other presenters have said from this podium, it is an honor and a privilege to get to share from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere at any time and to be of service at any level in AA. To be here in front of my heroes is an entirely different deal for me. I am overwhelmed with the fact that I get to share a podium with some of the people whose CDs and tapes I've been listening to since the day I got sober, and it is a real honor and a privilege. It's funny that I'm sharing on the 11th step. My sponsor, and Bob is my sponsor, and before I go too much further, my sobriety day is July 17th of 1996, and my home group is the best home group, Connect the Dots, right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Somebody said to me at one time, if you don't believe that your home group is the best home group, get a commitment. You might change your mind. But my sponsor's been trying to get me to do more and more work on step 11 ever since I got sober. It's one of those things that's been difficult for me. I don't know if you can relate. It's been very difficult for me to get active in step 11. And he finally found a way. He asked me to do this. So for the last week, this idea of improving my conscious contact with God is daunting, because it makes a statement, it makes a suggestion, it tells me that at some point along the line previous to step 11, I have made a conscious contact with God. And all I'm going to do now is I'm going to improve upon that contact. And in meetings and with friends and in public moments, of course, I feel like a guy that has a conscious contact with God. I mean, holy mackerel, I've got my place on the broad highway. But when I'm alone, and it matters, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't know how much conscious contact sometimes I really have. I mean, I know I'm supposed to be hooked up, in sync, connected to. I'm supposed to be, you know, in the hands of the Creator, but I don't always feel that way. Often I feel like it's just me in this story that I tell about my connectedness to God. And sometimes I feel like in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't share that because, gosh, by now, surely, I must be doing something wrong. My experience is that my connectedness to God, that my journey in this conscious contact, this movement that I'm in, is tidal. It comes and it goes, it ebbs and it flows, and sometimes I feel like I really am that close. I've had experiences on my drive to work. I have an hour-long drive to work through the desert. Sometimes I'm early enough where the sun is coming up as I'm taking that drive, and it is beautiful, and I have cried because I feel just so connected. And that's so rare that happens. Usually what I feel is I feel this sense that there's something, and I wish that I was closer to it, that I was more hooked up with it. My first attempt at anything to do with conscious contact kind of took me by surprise. You know, I'm involved in a group, and have been since I was first sober, where we're very busy. I mean, you guys, I'm preaching to the choir. You guys are, because you're here, by the fact that you're here, I'm sure that most of you are involved in groups like my group, where when I was new, they grabbed me, they told me get in the car, and they took me off and they swept me into Alcoholics Anonymous. I did my first fifth step, I was 28 days sober. I know that's too soon. It was my first resentment in Alcoholics Anonymous. Supposed to do one step a year. But we got so busy. We got going on this thing, and we did this the 1, 2, 3, and we got going, and now we're going to write an inventory, and I do the inventory, and I get moving, and I share this thing, and then they tell me, now, thank God you're closer to him. I don't know I'm closer to him. I'm just saying thank you. Okay, now we're going to do 6 and 7. We're going to do that really fast. Boom, 6 and 7. Okay, by the way, Sheldon, you'll do that for the rest of your life. Now, let's get going on further. We're going to do step 8. You're going to make the amends. When you make the amends, it's going to bring you closer to God, and now you're going to do step 10, where you're going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And there was never any time that I stopped and went, what is this relationship with God? What is this supposed to feel like? What's it supposed to look like? Is there a destination or a journey that we all share and that we end up in the same place? Are we on the same path? What is that supposed to look like for me? I read the 12 and 12 on step 11. I'm not a big 12 and 12 guy. The instructions are in the big book. But the 12 and 12 are a beautiful set of essays, I think, about Bill's feelings and what he experienced when he went through these steps. And so I grabbed the 12 and 12 to look at this and to see what he went through. And the most amazing thing happened. The first 2 pages of the 12 and 12 on step 11 don't talk about prayer or meditation or anything like that. In fact, it is 2 pages where Bill talks about how most of us, when we get to step 11, feel vacant in our conscious contact with God. What a relief that was for me. Because I had felt like there was something missing and I was doing something wrong and I had to fake it till I make it. And I don't know what that feels like for you, but for me it started to feel very lonely. I found myself at about 6 or 7 years sober, having not done any work in step 11 at all. And I don't know how that happened. I don't know why that happened. But I had not done any work in step 11 at all. I had done a lot of inventory, a lot of 10-step stuff. I'm the guy that I get in trouble and I go run into my sponsor and we do an inventory on what's wrong, and my sponsor points out where I've been frightened, dishonest, or afraid. He gives me the direction to go and make the amends and fix the problem. I get relief from that. I get the disturbance goes away. I get relief from that, and I don't do anything else. And 6 months later, a year later, 3 months later, next week, whenever it may be, I make the same mistake again. And I am constantly at my sponsor's house with the same set of problems and the same set of issues. Sometimes the faces change, the situations change, and the names change, so it's easy for me to pretend that it's a different set of circumstances. One of the blessings of sobriety for me is that my life has become very stable, though. I'm married to the same woman for 12 years. We're together 14 years. It's really difficult for me to say that the faces and the names change. I've been on the same job for 12 years. The faces and the names don't change that much. Not only am I having the same things happen, I'm having the same things happen with the same people, right? At the same place. I don't have to come to my sponsor with a written inventory. I just get to show up and go, I did it again. And he knows what it is. I go to the people at work to make amends. And it's embarrassing. It's not so bad with people in AA, but when you've got to go to a boss who is a normie and he understands the principle of amends as well, if not better than you, and you knock on his door and you say, do you have a minute? And he says, well, it didn't take you that long this time, only 3 days. Usually it takes you a week. It just gets embarrassing, you know. I did it again. I'm an I did it again guy. I did it again for years going in and out of the program, but I thought once I got sober, something spiritual and miraculous was supposed to happen, and I wasn't supposed to do it again no more. But I did it again. I get this one guy that is my boss, and people that know me know I've struggled a lot in my job, and I get afraid and I get scared and I react to things before they've happened. I react to things that aren't ever going to happen, but I'm certain they're going to happen. I get crazy and I get wound up and I get on the muscle and I know that things are going to happen that aren't ever going to happen, and I get crazy. And the one thing that the program up until step 11 has done for me is it has enabled me to stay on that job. It has enabled me to have these reactions inside of myself that are uncomfortable and painful and keep them to myself. I've quit that job 417 times. I've never told them. I have evidence that they hate me. My sponsor asked me to list it for him once, and it went like this. They promoted me 9 times in 12 years. They must hate me. They've sent me on vacation twice. They must hate me. And when they gave me that damn Rolex, I knew something was wrong. I have no evidence for any of the things that happen inside of me. I just get nuts. I don't know why I wouldn't do step 11. I don't know why I imagined that if what I am doing is leaving me uncomfortable, that the answer would be anywhere other than Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know why I imagined that the turmoil in my life would be solved with anything other than Alcoholics Anonymous. I guess I'm just stubborn or stupid or something. Right? I'm like the guy who loses his keys in his car and then is in his living room searching for them. And I am certain that the keys are in the living room. And I will tear the living room apart looking for the keys when the keys were never in the living room. And it never occurs to me to look outside the living room. The answer for me was in step 11, and I didn't know that. And the reason I didn't know that, I think, was because I didn't really understand what step 11 was asking me. Prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation. Well, I get prayer. I spent a lot of time in prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't a prayer before I got here. A pariah, maybe, but not a prayer. Meditation. I think that means something. I have an idea in my mind of what that means and what that looks like. I think that meditation requires that I take a room in my house, painted a beautiful off-white color, get some net curtains, you know, incense, some soft flute music. I think it requires that I dim the lights and sit in the lotus position, which, for me, would be the hardest part of the whole deal. First we meditate, then we go to the chiropractor. I don't know where I got that idea from. I think it must have been from movies, I guess. It must have been from things I heard growing up. You know, I was never really a hippie, but they had the best drugs, so I hung out with them a lot. And they were into that stuff, and I just thought maybe, you know, that was where I got the idea from. I don't know. But I never really knew what the word meditation meant. And I was doing a step study with my sponsor and another guy, Craig, and Craig had this old dictionary, and in this dictionary it described the word meditation in several different ways. And one of the ways that it described meditation was as if a general doth meditate a war, where he's planning and he's thinking about a war. And it's a beautiful idea, and I believe that is absolutely truthfully one amazing definition of the word meditation. But in the regular dictionary, when I went and looked at what it actually said in there about meditation, really, it was very simple, very similar, and the word meditation its definition has never really changed. What it says in the dictionary, this is from, strangely enough, from 1550, the definition of the word meditation from 1550. It simply means to contemplate or to plan. I thought it had changed in the 60s. You know, Bill writes this stuff in the 1930s, and then Paul McCartney goes off and meets a Maharashi, and he comes back, and we all think that the word meditation changed. But it didn't. Transcendental meditation in the 1960s is just an ancient Hindu writings in which one seeks to achieve relaxed state through regular periods of meditation where a mantra is repeated. In the Catholic faith, they've been doing the rosary for years. In our 12 and 12, we talk about the St. Francis prayer. Or simply we sit quietly and we go over this prayer in our mind and think about God. And I got very confused about what meditation was and what meditation wasn't. And I was finally directed to go look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it says in the big book about meditation, about what we should do for our 11-step meditation. So if you'll indulge me, I'm gonna share with you the directions that I found and what those directions have meant to me. I'm going to start here on page 85 in the big book. It says, as John had read so beautifully, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. And that was certainly true. When I had gone through the first 9 steps and was actively living my life, trying to do inventory on my day, and as things went, came up and happened to it, more 10-step stuff, it was absolutely true that I began to feel some sense of power, of presence of God. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. What happened to me when I had gone through the first 9 steps of the program, and I had had some kind of an awakening of my spirit, as I did not do more work in that area, whatever had started to come alive had started to shrink back and started to die again. And I found myself in this place where my conversation of conscious contact with God was vacant and empty. And I was trying to impress you that I had more of a conscious contact, more of an awakening, more of a feeling of the closeness of God than I ever actually had. Step 11 suggests prayer meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we were using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague on this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Better men than I are using it constantly. I don't know if you're like me in this area. People would come and knock on my door on a Sunday morning, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, and they're the religious guys that want to make me convert me and grab me and bring me into their faith. And the one thing that always, I hated it, right? I'm all hungover and these guys are clean and shiny, happy people. But they got the lights on in their eyes. They seem like they found something. A couple of times I went to church, which is strange because I'm a Jewish kid. There was this blonde. She had what I wanted. You know the rest of the story. So I go to church, and the people in the church, they're alive and they're vibrant, and there's something, they got something that I can't feel, I can't find, but it's real and it's genuine. Any of the great people in our society, the people that I look up to, the people throughout history, you always read in their lives how God had moved in their lives. I don't know why someone like me who had failed at everything was so adamant that I should not involve myself in something that all the greats in the universe had been so successful in their lives with. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, but we believe we can make definite and valuable suggestions. The book says here, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. I don't know about you, but I'm not good at constructively reviewing anything. When I look at you, I very rarely say, aren't you wonderful because? Right? Usually I destructively review just about everything that I ever look at. I have a keen ability to see the worst and the ugly in everything. But we constructively review our day. We look for the things that we've done that we're imperfect in, but not to beat ourselves up for, but in order to help us grow and become better, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? These are our character defects. Every character defect that I've ever had, any shortcoming, anything in my life that has ever made me uncomfortable, you can always trace to one of those four things. It's based in resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, or fear. And the reality is, if I'm dishonest, selfish, or resentful, usually what I am is afraid. I live my life ruled by self-centered fear. I wake up in the morning and the first thing that I wonder when I wake up is, what's my day going to be like? Am I going to like it? Are you going to like me? Is it going to be comfortable, fun, happy, and friendly? And I never, ever, ever imagine it is. I'm so driven by fear. I'm the guy that when I get home today, let's say the convention ends, I've had an amazing spiritual weekend. It's been beautiful. I mean, I've laughed and I've cried and I've seen old friends and it's been probably one of the greatest weekends that I could imagine, a high point of 2011. I'm going to get home. I don't live far away. I'll be home by 1:30. If I were to sit on my couch, spiritually uplifted and feeling fantastic, and think about my life, I would not spiral up into hysterics. I would not think about how wonderful it's been and how much better it's going to get and how fantastic everything and everybody is, and I'm so glad to be alive. I never spiral up. I am so driven by self-centered fear that I will spiral down into a mild depression. And by the end of the day, if somebody called me and said, "We were at the treat, wasn't it wonderful?" I would say, "Yeah, I guess. 2006 was better." Because I'm a nut. And I am driven by it. And when I go out in my day and in the world, I come from that perspective. I come from the place of, I'm not going to get enough. I'm just not going to get enough. And I live my, when you live your life the way I live my life, as if I'm not going to get enough, the only thing that I am able to do to combat that is make sure I steal some of yours. So was I selfish? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? Was I dishonest about, not just dishonest in a pocketbook sense, but was I dishonest in the way that I look at the world? Was I dishonest in the way that I believe your motives are? Was I dishonest in the way that I think that I'm driven, but you do it by choice? Right? I'm a sick guy that's trying to get along in the world. You're just an SOB. Was I dishonest? Do I owe an apology? Have I done anything that will have hurt you and caused separation? Have I done anything that will diminish my connectedness to you? Do I have to fix any wrongs? And have I kept anything to myself that should be discussed with another person? At once. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could have done for others? There are days in my life when I do this review that I can honestly say that pretty much I wasn't driven by resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. I have some good days. I don't subscribe to the fact that every single day alcoholics that walk in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day fail at the things that we strive for. I believe that no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles, but we do claim spiritual progress. And there are some days where I do my review that I can say to myself, I did pretty good. In fact, we all bet our lives on the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous works. And sometimes I think I get too down on myself, as if I'm always a failure and I never can have a good day and pass the review, which is why I think the book is so poignant when it says we constructively review our day. However, when it comes to the questions, were we kind and loving toward all? All. Not most. Was I kind and loving toward most? Yes. Was I kind and loving to people I like? Sure. Here's a great test. Was I kind and loving to the people that I will never, ever see again? Right? I mean, the people that, who cares? Right? How about the mean people? Was I kind and loving to the mean people? But one of the things that I've gotten hung up on lately, and I don't know if you share this, the way that this happens for you in Alcoholics Anonymous, but the way it happens for me as I go through my program is I'll get something stuck in my craw and I'll beat it to death as I think about it and examine it and play with it in my mind. And one of the things that has gotten stuck in my head lately is, where do my spiritual principles begin? I think they begin when you stop behaving yourself. When things don't go my way is the moment that my spiritual principles begin. When things are less than comfortable. Because when I'm having a good day and you're doing what I want to do and everything's fine and we're getting along and we're laughing and scratching, you know, I'm not spiritual. I'm getting my own way. It's when you go, no. And then you can finish the sentence with anything you like, right? But when you go, no. It is at that moment that we find out whether or not I have any spiritual principles. It is at that moment that we find out whether or not I'm on the right path. It is at that moment that happens. You know, it's very confusing for a guy like me when I first start learning this stuff, because what we just read basically was that we're going to do 4 through 9 again. Basically, what we're going to do is, at night before we go to bed, we're going to take a quick run through 4 through 9, which I would never have imagined would be 11-step work. It would make more sense to me, because what that sounds like is that we continue to take personal inventory. It sounds like step 10 stuff. It doesn't sound like step 11 stuff. In fact, you almost want to say that, geez, maybe Bill, on page 85, where he says step 11 suggests, maybe that's a misprint, and that should really be, you know, now that we're done with the nightly review, now it should say step 11 suggests, and we can start on the stuff that we do in the morning. But my experience, and I think probably most of our shared experience, is that without some kind of inventory, this thoughtful contemplation that is the definition of the word meditation is impossible. Before I started to do step 11 and bring step 11 in my life, obviously, like most of us, I'd been directed by my sponsor to pray at night and pray in the morning, and I would do maybe a serenity prayer or even just get on my knees and thank God at night that he kept me sober, and it would feel like this. Dear God, thank you for letting me stay sober today. I was at the grocery store earlier and I got eggs and milk and that was pretty good. I wish I hadn't forgotten the bread. Oh, shoot, wait a minute. I'm praying. Wait, let me get back to it. Dear Father, the morning's the worst, right? Dear God, I'm going to go to work today. Thank you for my job. Even though my boss is an SOB, and they don't pay me enough. I wish they paid me more. You know, if I had more money, I could get a new car. I really could use a new car. If I had a new car, the guys at the meeting, when they saw me, praying. Gotta get back to praying. Most of us in this room, I'm sure, have some kind of a meditative a set of action that we do at some point during our day. And I almost said, when I first started, I was lied to you. Like, this happened when I first started meditating. But now, of course, in ancient history, like this morning when I meditated. And I'll talk a little bit more in a minute here about what my process is that I do in the morning. But I have to set a timer for me to meditate with. And I set it for 5 minutes. And if I don't set a timer, it will feel like it's been 3 hours and I'm going to be late for work after 30 seconds. And it will be 30 seconds of the craziest thoughts running through my mind, right? It's insanity what goes on in my head. I am so not in control of my thoughts. It's ridiculous. Which is funny because during the day, I'll have a thought, which I know I don't control. And then I'll decide that thought is true. Worse, I'll decide I agree with that thought, and I'll screw up my entire day. But what I think has to happen for me is something that I watched happen with my wife. And it was an amazing thing, and she didn't even know she was doing it. But it was an amazing thing. We're in the house, and our house is a very, I'm very blessed. Jacqueline is an amazing housekeeper, and the house is always tidy. But we live in the house. So sometimes there's a thing laying out or something out of place. Friend of ours says he wants to come over. I tell Jacqueline that so-and-so is coming over. She freaks out and starts tidying what to me is an already tidy house. Right? Starts putting shoes away. I mean, the shoes belong in the, for Christ, tidying up, maybe there's a newspaper, maybe, like, well, you've got to tell me when people are coming over. Running around like a crazy person, making sure the house is spotless before this guy comes over. This guy would not notice if she didn't tidy up. I've been to this guy's house. On our worst possible day, this guy would walk in and go, "Wow, you guys are clean people." He wouldn't care, and he wouldn't notice. Someone comes over to our house, and Jacqueline has not had time to tidy. She sits uncomfortable, feeling like that person notices. Feeling uncomfortable. And even though she loves that person, she's like waiting for him to leave because she's uncomfortable because she didn't get to clean house before they came. And that is how I am with God. If I don't clean house before I invite God into my home, into my mind and into my body, I will not be comfortable. I can't really pray. I can't really focus. I can't really meditate. I can't feel comfortable with God inside my house if I don't clean it first. And I got to tell you, and I know this to be true, God don't care if my house is clean or dirty. It is of absolutely no difference to God whether or not I tidy the resentments, put away the fears, straighten out the selfishness, or vacuum the dishonesty before I invite him into my heart. He don't care. In fact, God loves me. I always know it's in spite of my character defects, but I think God loves me because of my character defects. You know, those of us that sponsor, and I'm sure most of us sponsor guys, you know, the guys that are the most screwed up, don't you have a soft spot for those guys? Right? Don't you just want to grab them and kind of give them a noogie and tell them, yeah? You know, they call and you're like, yes, you know. It's Spanky. I'm so excited. You know? You know? And God, I think God's like that with us. But when Spanky shows up, he's like this. Who's the last person I want to call when I'm not feeling good? Sponsor. I want to feel better before I call him, right? I would much rather report the news than ask for direction. Hey, right? You'll never guess what happened. Well, I'm okay. But you'll never guess what happened. I think that that nightly review is so important because if I don't do that, I will shut myself off and not let God in. And if God comes in and I can't stop, as if I could stop Him coming in. But when God comes in, I am not open. I am uncomfortable and I am defended. And I have to do that nightly review. In the 12 and 12, it says, there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. And I was sober a long time before I started a journey into meditation, and my life got better, and I was comfortable most of the time, and prayer alone was fantastic. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Now and then we may be granted a glimpse of the ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom, and we have been confronted and assured that our own destiny in that realm will be secure for as long as we try, however falteringly, to find and do the will of our Creator. As we have seen, self-searching, this means by which we bring new vision, action, and grace to bear upon the dark and negative side of our natures. It is a step in the development of the kind of humility that makes it possible for us to revive God, to receive God's help. Yet it is only a step. We will want to go further. I'm trying to have a relationship with God. I'm trying to have a communicative relationship with God. What I do when I only pray, it feels like. Imagine if we were going to have a relationship. We're going to become close, you and I. And so what I do in order for us to become close is I run at you, no matter what you're doing, tap you on the shoulder, and I say, give me happiness, health, wealth, and a great place to live. Okay, see you later. And then I leave. And then I come back later, and I tap you on the shoulder. I go, hey, thanks. And I leave. Not much of a relationship. Not much of a relationship. For me to feel like I'm connected and have a relationship, I would have to stay and hear what you have to say to that. I would have to stay and hear what you have to say to that. So I do this nightly review and I redo these steps in a hurry and I try and find these character defects and I do all of this. And I do this to see why I need God. In that nightly review, what I'm looking at is I'm looking at the way I led my life, trying as best as I can to diminish self-will, trying as best as I can to diminish self-centeredness, and I look at where of myself, even with asking for God's help, where I've fallen short. And I see a vision of my life and why a guy like me needs God. We're careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. It would be so easy for me to do a nighttime inventory and get myself in this spiraling down and beat myself up. And then the first thing I got to do if it's not too late is I got to call my sponsor and whine at him for the bad guy that I was. Or first thing in the morning, I wake up and I'm just a piece of crap. I don't know if you've ever done that to yourself. You beat yourself up with the mistakes you make. One of the things that I think is so beautiful of a realization that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is this is as Sheldon sees it, okay? But one of the things that has been really important to me is this vision of this book that Bill writes, with inspired certainly by God, of some lofty principles that are impossible for any of us to hold up to. But he writes these way of living, this way of thinking, this way of being, this impossible dream of of being just so plugged in, so turned on, so kind, loving, beautiful, non-resentful, not afraid, packing everything I can into the stream of life, never thinking of me and only thinking of you. And then he tells us, don't be ridiculous now. No one among us will be able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. Now, we're going to claim spiritual progress, not perfection. We're going to get better, and we're going to strive to get better. And we're not going to use this as a way to let ourselves off the hook, this old behavior garbage that's snuck in through treatment centers. But we are going to admit to ourselves that it is absolutely impossible for any of us to pass this nighttime review and say, yeah, I rock. Now I got this thing. In fact, I'm so good, I don't need God anymore. Isn't that what would happen if I ever got that good? No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. That means that sometimes, on some days, if you followed me around with a list of principles, you might go, that's nothing like what we talk about here. And did I let myself off the hook? Can I do the repairs? Is there anything that I need to do? Do I need to discuss it with anybody? Are there any amends that need to be made? After making our review, we ask for God's forgiveness. Inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Sandy Beach was here three, four years ago doing this step. And he said something that just lit me up. Just lit me up. He said that the reason that we do this nighttime review, that we do any of this inventory stuff, is so we can simply figure out, was I wrong or were you having a bad day? If you were having a bad day, I just forgive you and move on. If I was wrong, I say sorry and move on. And either way, the separation diminishes. And what I'm trying to achieve is a clear channel to God where the separation has diminished. It's all I'm trying to do. And the next thing we do is we go to sleep. Now, the book doesn't say go to sleep, but the next sentence is on awakening. So we do have some poetic license where we can make some assumptions of what Bill. If you're new, that's the only assumption you're allowed to make. Everything else you have to take directly out of the book. But you can't assume you went to sleep. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. But before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. So here's what I do. I get quiet. I wait until there's nobody else around. I set my timer for 5 minutes. I begin to think a little bit about God. There's a couple of really nice, short prayer mantras that I've learned, like, I am the place, or be still and know that I am there. Think a little about them. And I ask God to remove from me self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And then I think about my day. And I don't have a very complicated life. Some of you might need more than 30 seconds to think about your day. But my life isn't that complicated. Well, I'm going to go to work. I hope I can treat those guys well, God. Let me not be selfish or self-seeking. Keep me out of self-pity. For my wife and son, I got to take care of those guys. Let me be kind. Let me go to my meeting or participate with the guys I sponsor. I don't believe, and again, this is my experience, so you don't have to agree with it, it's just my experience, but I don't believe that God is in the employment agency business. I don't think He cares where I work. So I don't need to ask Him about what job I should have. I think He cares about how I treat the people where I work. So I ask Him as I plan my day to help me treat them well. I don't think He's a real estate agent. I don't think there is God's will for me in a house or an apartment. I think God's will for me is how I treat the people in my house or my apartment. And help me, Father, but I don't think He's a pimp either. I don't think God's will for me is my partner. I think God's will for me is how I treat my partner. So I don't have to get into deep detail about the complications and the twists and turns and the minutiae of my day. I just have to ask God to direct my thinking. I'm going to go have a day. It's going to be much like most other days. Direct my thinking. Let me treat people with love and respect. Relief from me, self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with insurance, for after all, God gave His brains to use. Alcoholics Anonymous, when we've been here a while and we have worked these principles into our lives and it has become a tapestry by which we live, is not a place where broken people remain broken and huff and sigh about how broken they are and remain sad and broken. We get repaired here. And that when we go through this way of life, we end up with people that are able to use our brains. And in step 10, we get our will back. And I don't subscribe to the fact that you know, once an alcoholic piece of garbage, always an alcoholic piece of garbage. In fact, I think Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest recycling plant in the universe. It takes broken, destroyed bits of garbage and turns them into beautiful, successful, active members of society. And that God gave His brain to use, and that under this kind of tutelage, we can be amazing people if we so choose. God gave His brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Imagine this. And it is an absolute impossibility for me, maybe not for you, but imagine this. Imagine a day where there was no self-pity. Now, another word for self-pity would be self-centered fear. Imagine a day where I was not worried about whether or not I was going to get mine, and I wasn't, oh, woe is me, and they're out to get me, and nobody likes me, and I did not act on the fears that generates. That I was honest. That I was able to look at the world the way it is, instead of through my paradigm shift that some of the speakers talk so eloquently about, and that I wasn't self-seeking, that I wasn't just worried about me. If I could ever have a day that way, then when I did the review that night, I would find that I wasn't selfish, dishonest, or afraid, that I packed into the stream of life as much that I could. That on that day that I was able to behave that way, that would be a day in which I could say I had thought of others, not myself. Which is why these two things are so magically interwoven. Because if in the morning I can set the direction of my day in the direction that the On Awakening sets it, that when I retire at night, I will find that I've had a much better day. My spiritual life is very confused. Some of you know this about me. I grew up in an atheist Jewish home. Which what that means is that we're a Jewish home, but we know we're wrong. However, we also know that you're more wrong than us. I'm absolutely convinced of that. So I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very, very confused about what God is and what God isn't and what's supposed to be and what. And I just don't have a, I don't have a path I can fall back on that makes any sense to me. I can't do the Jewish thing. It feels strange. I certainly can't do a Christian thing. It seems even stranger. So I do the only thing that an atheist Jew can do, and that is I start to look at Eastern philosophy. I found a book called How to Be a Jubu. This is a real book for budding Jewish Buddhists. I wanted so badly to be a Tibetan monk, till somebody pointed out I wasn't from Tibet, which was complicating matters. But some of the stuff that I read blew me away and then caused me to look at other things. I'm reading a book by the Dalai Lama, happens to be the head of that faith. And he says that in the ancient Eastern philosophies, that they would start their day asking that they might be good and helpful. And at the end of the day, they would ask themselves, had they been good and helpful? If they had, they would congratulate themselves. If they had not, they would admonish themselves and ask to do better the next day. In the Catholic faith, there is confession, and there is, after confession, there is meditation. The rosary is meditation. In ancient Christian faiths, here's a definition. Maybe I can find it, maybe I can't. Definition of ancient Christian meditation, which is, you know, the guys that Bill was running around with when he wrote the book, is the same deal. It's this ancient first century Christianity. A form of prayer which is structured and attempts to get in touch with, to deliberately reflect upon the revelations of God. Jewish meditation, traditions and practices of contemplation raising from visualization and intuitive methods. Ancient, non-complicated things that we put in our lives through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that are not new ideas that people have been using since time began to allow us to set our lives, our days, in a direction that hopefully we can follow, expecting to fail, that when we fail, we look at our failures, hoping to do better the next day. And that when I live my life under those ideals, my life is better. This guy at work that I struggled so horribly with, that has been my boss for so many years, I had a meeting scheduled with him the following day. And I've had enough meetings with this guy to where I know absolutely and certainly what they are. I'm 100% convinced that I know what this meeting is about, and I know that I don't want to be there. I'm convinced that it is going to ruin my day tomorrow, and nobody can tell me different. Me and my wife were talking about it. We both decided that this time I'm not going to take it. Which is why neither me nor my wife are my sponsor. Because we agree with each other that when they're out to get me, I should get them back. You want to know the craziest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous? The guys I sponsor, I don't give them that kind of direction. I give them the kind of direction we learn in Alcoholics. My wife is an amazing sponsor. I hear her with the girl she sponsors. She would never co-sign that stuff. But when it's about us, it's about us. And that's a whole different conversation. So we've decided I'm going to go in there the next day and I'm going to straighten him out. So before I do that, I got to call Bob because that's what I've been taught to do. I am so grateful that it was beaten into me early in sobriety that there are certain several things that I need to do and that I don't defend my right to be right. And when I got something like this going on, I have learned that I call my sponsor and I tell him that tomorrow I got this meeting with this guy and he's always an SOB and you know what that means? It's going to make me crazy. And he starts telling me about, gosh, you know, Sheldon, what must it be like in this guy's life for him to be the way he is? Can you find a little compassion? I mean, you know, seems like he doesn't have a friendly direction, blah, blah, blah. You've got to try and go into that meeting and be helpful and kind. You've got to try and find a way to make his day easier. You've got to look for where you're doing things wrong, that maybe his corrective direction will help you do things better. Blah, 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 blah. And I just lost my mind. And I have never lost my mind at my sponsor like this before, but I just lost my mind. I said, God damn it. What, can I once, just once, how about this time? Can I once be right? Right? Just once. I'm so tired of calling you. It's been 15 years. 15 years I've been calling you. And every time I call you, you tell me I'm wrong. They're right. I'm exhausted. I want to be right. It's my turn. Right? Just once. How about this? How about I go to them and tell them how I want my coffee? Find out how they take their coffee and bring them a cup. Just once. He says to me, you're sober 15 years.
Yes, I am.
15 hard years. Do you have a good life? Of course I have a good life. What's that got to do with anything? I mean, do you have a nice home? Beautiful home. How's your marriage? Marriage is great. How's your son? Son's fine. So you have a great life based on being wrong. Why would you want to change that now? So I went in the next morning. I said, how would you like your coffee? You want to know what's worse? The meeting was about none of the things I thought it was about. He was a perfect gentleman. He was very nice to me. He asked me my opinion. When I gave my opinion, he valued it. He thanked me for working there. And I left. And I don't know about you, but that pissed me off more than anything. I'm so tired of people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous acting like they have sponsors. Just wears you out, don't it? Oh, boy. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers will come after we have tried this for a while. There's a promise in step 9 that we'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. And here the promise becomes realized as I set my day up to be a guy that can receive God's direction. God's direction comes in. What used to be the occasional hunch, what used to be the hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Still being inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. I get off my knees in the morning, and some mornings I'll do a meditation where I get this feeling of going deeper and deeper and finding union with God. And other days I don't. Some days I feel very connected, and other days it is just an exercise of practice. But even on the days where I feel the most connected, often very quickly, but certainly throughout the day, at some point I feel disconnected. You know, the hassles and bustles of life will separate me from that moment of union. Which means the next day, I have just made conscious contact with God. because of the tidal feeling that I get with my relationship with God, where sometimes I feel like I am knee-deep in the waters of spirituality, and other days I can't even see where the waves are crashing on the shore, that I am always inexperienced and just making conscious contact with God. I will sometimes go through moments, months, where I'll be able to retrieve that conscious contact quickly, and other times I will feel like I am alone in the valley. One of the things that I think sometimes happens in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, in some circles sometimes, is that because we know that conscious contact with God is our goal and what we aspire to have, we're embarrassed to admit that we don't always have it. And so if you're like me, I want you to know that I am often disconnected. I often feel like I am not wrapped in the arms of God. The good news is that often I feel like I am, that often I do feel connected, and that often it does feel good, but not always. Not always. I was at a meeting. Bob was there. He was at our home group, a book study. It was a Step 11 study, and one of the new guys in the group said the thing that just blew my mind. You know, sometimes out of the mouths of babes come such nuggets of amazing clarity. And this guy is talking about conscious contact. And he was talking about how he didn't really understand conscious contact. He didn't really get what we were talking about. And then he said, until the other day he was driving home from the meeting. And he knew when he was driving home that there were cops on the road. He could there was signposts with speed limits and traffic lights. And he knew there were cops on the road. He had an unconscious contact. But then one pulled in his rearview mirror, and he had a conscious contact with the cops on the road. And there is a huge difference between knowing there are cops on the road and consciously having a vision of those cops. And I went, I'm like that with God. I'm like that with God. We might pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And we've all had them. She's God's will for me. No, really. Do you think it'll be God's will that I get that job? I don't know. I think it'll be God's will if you get the job, you treat the people there nice. That'll be God's will. I have made crazy, insane decisions, thinking that it's God's will. And I guarantee, and you can write it down, that today I told you I'm likely to make many more. Because sometimes I get drunk on the spirituality and on the idea that I'm supposed to be connected and plugged in. Sometimes I get dizzy on that idea. And we are likely to take that presumption to absurd actions. But more and more, we become comfortable with it, and it becomes a plane of inspiration we come to rely on. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that will be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we'll be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We especially ask for freedom from self-will, because that's the thing that's driving me. Because that's the thing that's driving me. Because I am always slipping into self-will. I am always slipping into me getting my way because I think that I know best. Because I take the position of the director on page 60 through 63. And I just think that if only people would do as I wished, everyone, including me, but mostly everyone, would be pleased. So I constantly have to be asking to make sure that I'm not slipping into self-will and I have freedom from it. We are careful not to ask for ourselves. You know, the way that the step is actually written, it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God's understanding, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And I think the most important word there is only. Praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. One of the things, one of the ideas that I had about God, and again, I don't know where I got these ideas from, But one of the ideas that I had about God was that God was kind of up in the heavens somewhere, waiting for us to pray. And that I would say, God, please help little Billy. You know he needs crutches. And if you would help him, that would be fantastic. And that God would be up in heaven and he'd be building trees and making birds and coming up with duck-billed platypuses, for crying out loud, which is, if you ever see one of those, is an amazing thing. And then he'd go, oh, God, I forgot. Thank you, Sheldon. Billy's crutches. Right after I invent the giraffe, I'm going to get on that. Which isn't the kind of God that I can believe in. I can't, because if God's going to forget about anything, it's going to be me, right? Or even worse, that he's up there in some kind of cosmic computer. That's 4,423 votes for Billy's crutches. If we get to 25,000, the little boy will walk again. And I can't believe in a God like that either. Some cosmic vote counter, you know? We all must pray together because if God hears us make enough noise, he will succumb to our will. The problem is the kind of things that I want, right? The kind of things that I want, God's not going to succumb to. And if he did, 15 years ago, I thought what would be best for me was a bottle of scotch, some hookers and crack. And I'm likely to slip back into that kind of insanity if I start getting the golden ticket and being able to will things to happen. The best thing that I can ask for is that I can ask for the knowledge of God's will. What is God's will? I don't know. The book says that it's that I try and fit myself to be of maximum usefulness to God and his kids. I think serving God's kids is his will. Perform his work well, take care of you guys, and he'll take care of me, making my life none of my business. I don't know. I think the most obvious thing that I could say about God's will is this. That if God is some kind of creator, and I told you I struggle a little bit with what my idea of God is and isn't. I could buy that whether it's that we all are some kind of a piece of God displaying himself as us, or if we've grown out of some kind of a cosmic biosphere, or if we are actually been created by an omnipotent ruler of the universe, that there is some kind of creative intelligence here. That if there is a creative intelligence, obviously God's will for me must be for me to be the best me that I can be. That what God wants from me is to be a Sheldon. With all its imperfections, all its craziness, all its manicness, all its madness. And that when the problems arise for me in my life, is when I look over and I go, Sheldon's okay, but I'd like to be more like Charlie. I'd like to be more like Michael. And then the problems of my life begin when I start to diminish Sheldon and try to be more of a Michael or more of a Charlie. Or more of a something that God never intended for me to be. And in periods of prayer and meditation, I ask God, you know what is the craziest thing I ask God for? I ask God to help me forgive me for being me. And let me celebrate being me. Because sometimes I forget. Sometimes I forget that if what I am is an example of what God can be, we let him demonstrate through us what we can be. That the very best that I can be is just be the best me that I can be. Bottom of that page, it says, as we go through our day, we pause when agitated. an old-timer told me when I was very, very new that the best thing that I would ever expect to get from Alcoholics Anonymous, the very best thing that I would expect to get from Alcoholics Anonymous would be the 10 minutes, the 10 seconds. The 10 seconds. The 10 seconds between when something happens and I react. Because when I can get that 10 seconds, my reaction is vastly different. Something happens, I react. Something happens, I react. I love when Bob Bazance talks about, you know, I'm like a jukebox, and if you hit B7, I play B7. Something happens, I react. When something happens and I react, that is when you get the worst Sheldon that can possibly be. When I can receive the gift of those few seconds in between happening and reaction, that's when I'm able to come out. And I ask God for that as we go through the day. We pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Why would I constantly have to remind myself of that? Because I don't know what happens at 16 years sober, but at 15 years sober, active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm constantly trying to run the show. And I constantly have to remind myself, not Sheldon, God. Not Sheldon, God. One of the meditations that I do is I'll breathe in God and I'll breathe out Sheldon. Because there's always too much of me in everything I do and never enough God. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We're then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, or self-pity. You want to see the bad decisions in my life? Get me excited. I'll do something stupid. Get me frightened or angry or full of self-pity. I'll destroy my life in a heartbeat. Anything I can do to keep me out of those emotions is ultimately helpful. For we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. The world is very heavy. And when I try to carry it on my shoulders, it wears me out. The bottom line is for me in this 10-11 mix, in this inventory and meditation mix, is for me to remember that at my best, I am flawed. And at my worst, I am forgiven. At my best, I am flawed. At my worst, I am forgiven. And the journey that I take through life is a mixed up, muddled up journey that I do my best in. I said to my son, my son's 10 years old. My son, he's never been to a religious education. We have a spiritual home. We have an alcoholic God in our home. He asks about prayer. We talk about prayer, but he's never been indoctrinated by anyone for anything. He's just watched our lives. He says to me, Dad, what's your favorite thing that God has ever done? And I want to be clever, right? Because this is a 10-year-old virgin mind. And he's coming to Dad. Who else? For spiritual education. So I think for a minute, you know, and I kind of get the pose. And, well, son, I think it's that God lets us feel and give love. Pretty good, right? I was proud of myself. He looks at me and says, that's a good one, Dad. I said, what's your favorite thing? He says, I think it's that God gives us challenges. Otherwise, life would be boring. I asked him to sponsor me. I can't do my sexual imagery with him, but everything else we could probably. What an amazing journey. This journey of step 11, this journey of conscious contact with God, this journey of feeling like I am with the spirit of the universe is a very personal, private, individual journey. A personal, private, and individual journey that I take hand in hand with you. That I take hand in hand with you. And when I get there, I am in my own personal, private place with you. that we're on an individual personal journey traveling together to very different places. And when we arrive there, we'll be joined in the fellowship of the Spirit. Thanks for letting me share.